Hello, and welcome to Enough Wicker, a podcast where, as the good book says, neither rain nor sleet nor dark of night shall keepeth us from discussing the greatest television show of all time, The Golden Girls. I'm Lauren.
I'm Sarah.
I'm not doing another take of that intro. It's been a time, okay? It's a hard one to say. Anyway, today we're tackling the 177th and 178th episode in the series, Home Again, Rose, Parts 1 and 2.
You did it beautifully.
Thank you. Thank you.
Peepeth earth. I cannot. I mean,
So.
I don't watch these two episodes often, this arc, since it is, it's intense, makes you, it's a heavy episode.
Scary, yeah.
But I knew that Blanche had all the like malapropisms from like the Bible and whatever it is, but I just never noticed the like the A-U-T-H pronunciation of us until this rewatch, and I was like, oh my God. And that's why I was like, you have to say it. You
Yeah,
did a great
that's
job.
what I've read. The Bible quoting, we'll get into my
Oh yeah. Oh
thoughts on
yeah.
it, but it is funny how like many made up things there seems to be.
Well, she just, well, I mean, what is it like? She has the obviously the neither rain nor sleet is the post office like
Yeah.
creed, and then it's like the US Marines creed. It's like,
Yeah,
I forget if she has
the
another one,
shores
but
of
it's like
Tripoli.
it's I mean, it's pretty fucking funny. Like, again, we'll get into it, we're skipping ahead, but like, yeah, I have a lot of thoughts as to the religious angle, but I will say that every time it annoys me, then she makes me laugh again.
Yeah, agreed. Definitely agree.
Ah, but shall we, where should we start?
Let's start at the beginning because I want to talk about Janet, the daughter who hates Blanche.
Oh my
Because
God, I love that.
it's so
Immediately
funny.
just cut down. That didn't last long. Well, I have thoughts on this, right? Because this is the only time we actually see Janet.
Yeah.
Right? And so one, she's not like I pictured. But two, she is the if you recall season one on Golden Girls, when David comes and he's 14, she's the one that ships David to hang with his grandmother, and like she's having marital troubles, and then like Blanche actually kind of chews her out on the phone and is like, you got to focus on this boy. Well, what's interesting is that there's another kid here,
Right.
Sarah, which is, how did I not remember that? What the
I
fuck?
know.
Little blonde girl Sarah. But
Yeah, little
she
Sarah.
clearly is what? Like, she's no more than 6 years
Seven,
old,
yeah,
maybe
six or seven, yeah.
seven. So if you think about it and do the math, and as we know, this show is famously accurate with not only Blanche's family, but definitely with ages and timelines. But if you assume that everything is lining up correctly, like maybe David was struggling and they had marital troubles because they just had like a surprise kid for the after their they
Yeah.
had a 14-year-old, right? So I mean, that's a classic thing too, right? You just like had a little whoops baby, no offense, Sarah. I'm sure they love you very much, but it's kind of interesting to like add that up, right? Just be like, oh yeah, this is David's mom, and he's definitely in his 20s at this point,
Yeah.
or close to it.
Well,
So
I was thinking she could even be like a second marriage baby. Like
yeah,
maybe the baby
true.
is out.
If they broke up, yeah.
But Janet herself is like young and cute and like does not look to have a 20-year-old. To me, she does not look older than, I
Yeah.
don't know, 30 maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
So yeah, I mean, it certainly doesn't add up. I feel like it's a bit of a strange choice actually to just throw Janet in here and some random granddaughter that we've never heard about. I don't even
Yeah.
necessarily, I guess it's like to serve as like someone to bounce off Blanche's like new crazy Christian ideals. But it feels random. Like I don't really know what purpose she's doing here.
I don't know where the storyline's supposed to end up, right? Because there
Right.
is no conclusion. There's no like story where that comes back around. The daughter who hates you, and like, when she's like, oh, I'm a sexy grandma, and like, I'm sure a lot of people do. I mean, it's funny, right? But I think like there's no the religious thing doesn't go anywhere. The like the conversation that she's supposed to have with Blanche doesn't go anywhere, right? Like there's not they just like introduce it and then they drop that line, right.
And
which is weird.
It feels especially bizarre that Blanche would push this on her when, like, she has a very good, in my opinion, like really good take about it, and she's like, "I'm not teaching my kid this."
Oh my god, she goes, "Organized religion, it makes me crazy." I was like, "I wrote, go Janet."
Yeah, right. Janet's a radicalist. But it just feels so, you know, like none of Blanche's growth is setting in here. It's like she's pushing these things on her daughter and her granddaughter, who clearly don't believe it. Like, it's brand new. And it just feels like when she's like, "Oh, we'll go to church together," especially because this is the daughter who hates you, like, and you just had, you know, like, have you learned a lesson from Pecky at all? Like,
Oh my God.
It's a pretty hollow storyline. It's not super well developed.
No, it's like, yeah, you're right. There's not, it sort of just left it there. And you're like, this actually could have been kind of what they did with the Kirsten storyline, where it kind of could have been like, oh, I see a side of my mother now that I have not seen.
Yeah.
Because that Kirsten is plugging in for what's supposed to be the Janet storyline. And I would love it if they connected the Janet story to the Kirsten story about being like, oh, wow, like, my mother's willing to mortgage the house for this woman. Like, that's pretty selfless, you know? Like, and like that, because that's the theme of Blanche is selfish, right? Like, Blanche is selfish. You know, we can wait in the kitchen if you have to say goodbye to Uncle whoever.
That's good.
Like, oh, that's really great. I mean, it's really funny, right? So, like, she has some good, like, oomph in this episode to start, and then they sort of drop it. And I wonder if they sort of drop it because Kirsten enters the picture and they can't have too many of those, like, daughter storylines hanging out there. You know what I mean? I do like at the end where like her and Kirsten are together in a room for a bit and they kind of greet each other with a little smooch. Like, that's really sweet, right? I kind of wish we had seen more of that. But
it could have been something. It honestly could have been something in its own, like, in its own episode, really. I feel like that could have been its own thing. Because also I do feel like we're owed some redemption even from the Melissa episode, which
absolutely.
Is Melissa Janet's kid?
Oh, Jesus. I don't know.
I don't know. I feel like
Yeah, I mean, I think so.
Huge plot hole there.
Oh, geez. How many kids you got, Janet?
Yeah, right? But yeah, I agree. It would have been nice to see them together. She also, like, for what it's worth, like, when she's in it, she's great. Even, like, when she shows up to the hospital and she's like, oh, I figured, like, something went wrong, like, it is good and it feels very natural. Like, she really does kind of blend in. But I really wanted to start there because I think that line is so funny, and like the way it gets set up. Moving through to crashing a high school reunion. I kind of love that. I feel like, yeah, like to Blanche,
I
like 40
love
years
it.
later, who would know?
I love it. And I also
right
I love,
met.
I like wrote, I know. I wrote so many times, I love Blanche's scheme. I mean, and like studying up on the yearbook, genius preparation. I love that so much. I think it's amazing. And it's also like, yeah, whatever. Like, you'll get kicked out. Like, who cares if you get, you know, if you get thought. I mean, obviously, who cares? It's funny that I actually said that exact line, because I think that that line is a cop out for Blanche when she is representing apparently somebody who was an asshole in high school and where people like get their feelings hurt. But it's also kind of like, oh God, I don't know. I have so many thoughts on high school reunions in general, which mostly add up to like Sophia's line of, this is sad. This is so sad.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine celebrating a prom king and queen 40 years later? Like, come on, man.
No.
So I kind of like, I love the scheme of like fucking with people, because you're also just like, are you really taking this seriously? Like, guys, get a fucking life, you know? But I also think the, oh, who cares bit for Blanche is kind of like a writing cop out. I feel like that could have gone a little bit better. I don't know. I'm kind of all over the place on the reunion, but to your point, I love the scheme. I think it's genius. And I think it's like actually thinking of Rose, where she was really bummed to have met, you know, missed hers. So it's kind of sweet.
Yeah. And it makes for some funny bits. I think, especially, you know, like theoretically they did not go to high school in Miami, although Dorothy's high school reunion was also in Miami, so that remains to be seen. But
whatever.
Anyway,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think it's fun. I think it sets up some funny things, like Sophia being the Spanish teacher and Dorothy being popular. I think like that is a fun twist. Yeah, like as a concept, it seems kind of fun and like goofy. So I am into it. And yeah, like they're thinking of Rose. And I think what also is really interesting is that they really lay the foundation early on that Rose has not been feeling well and like just won't go to the doctor about it because, and that checks out. Like that's very like, you know, prairie greatest generation, like we take care of ourselves, like that type of,
right.
That type of thought. And so like that's from the very beginning, we kind of know that is going on.
Right, right, exactly. Hayseed dresses. Oh geez. But yeah, I mean it's interesting. Let's dive into the reunion piece of when they actually get there, like when they're trading like name tags and things like that. What is your vibe?
Well, right before they even go and they're talking about going, I think it's so funny when Sophia is like assuming she's going to be included or like trying to insert.
Oh my God. Herself. Yeah. With the age thing.
How are we going to stop that from happening? Like the Three Musketeers thing. Like, it's so funny. And then Blanche is like, ultimately like, yeah, you'll just come with us. Like, it's fine. Obviously.
Totally.
Like,
no more sitters. We're still in litigation with the last one.
I think the class slut bit is kind of funny because unfortunately I do feel like that is a thing that people know off book. In my high school, we had a superlative, which was class flirt, which honestly, like, ugh,
oh, gross.
But I do believe it was a euphemism for class slut. And okay, so getting to the actual reunion, Dorothy looks so cool. She's wearing this like green.
Oh my God, it's an awesome outfit, right?
Yeah, the like floral with the metallic gold. It looks awesome. So she's meant to be Cindy Lou Peoples. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, all right. So in concept, it's funny. Getting the name tags is funny too, because they're all like random. Kim Fung Toy is a pretty big swing, I think. Like,
wait, Kim Fung Toy,
really,
yeah, no, I know. Yeah.
Trying to go for something, which to be honest, like I definitely have found that funny in the past. Like when I was a kid, I thought it was like, oh my God, that's so goofy. But obviously, like Rose doing that or attempting to do the accent, like that's not good.
Yeah, that part's pretty gross. I mean, like the whole I do like the idea of her just being like, obviously, these are my sticker, you know, like that she just like, here you go, Myron, you know, like all of that. Like that's a very Rose thing to do. But yeah, they just take it a little too far with the accent thing, which I don't appreciate. But yeah, I just think it's interesting. I feel like they do I don't know, it's fun. I feel like the reunion is stretched out a lot longer than I thought it was, like the actual scene, especially with all the Blanche bits, right, of like our daughter. And like, I do really enjoy the why can't people just be themselves, and then she's like, ah, with the guy, like Tony
Lott, salesman,
Dorothy.
Is good.
yeah, exactly, where she's like, oh my gosh. I mean, Dorothy is kind of made for that, right? Like she feels uncomfortable sometimes, but she is very good in like a crowd most of the time, so she's doing a pretty good job. But you know, like, I mean, the Dorothy trade with me, go to hell, Myron, it's a very mean, and actually like one of the few like on the nose jokes about Dorothy like resembling a man in the episode, which is interesting. But I do appreciate how she's just like, go to hell, Myron. But yeah, it's I think it's interesting. I don't like when Rose calls out to Dorothy and falls. I don't like how Dorothy just stands there for a while. That's not like her at all. Like I guess it's supposed to be that she's like so swept up in like being the prom queen, but everybody else rushes to her side, and it seems odd that Dorothy doesn't, I guess. And she calls out to Dorothy. It kind of reminds me of like the last episode with like her choosing her as the maid of honor and that conversation that we had. You know, I know she's walking towards her. That's kind of why she says that. But yeah, it's just kind of weird. Like there's parts of the reunion that I really like, and then there's parts that just feel off, and I'm not really sure how to put my finger on it.
Well, I feel like Dorothy Besides making the joke of, like, you've upset Kim Feng Toy, like, clearly indicates to me that she doesn't think it's serious. Like, maybe Rose just, like,
tripped
or, like, whatever. And then, you know, when she does, I think the Arthur is really amazing when she does, realize that it's real.
Yeah.
Like, the urgency and, like, the panic in her voice, I think, really comes through when she's like, get help.
That's true.
And, yeah, I mean, like, she's definitely riding high, being popular, and that's always fun to see, like, Cindy Lou being the prom queen. It is cute. And I do like the tar salesman bit. I think that that's really funny. I love the callback to Rose being like, oh my god, a tar salesman. Like, you know, she's
totally
still, she's still like so herself. And they do, I think, like, what's interesting is they really build up Rose like being so lovable and just like so, you know, cute, naive. I don't like the doctor bit that we talked about earlier, like when she kind of is unnecessarily like, we don't believe in psychiatrists either, which feels like it would be right.
And then she laughs. It's so weird. Yeah.
You know, like in St. Olaf, like, you know, there's a lot to say about that. And I think like the
reveal, it kind of like falls flat. They don't follow up on that.
There's no follow up. The reveal of them being exposed and they're like, imposters. Like, that's so ridiculous.
Yeah, I know.
Who cares?
I know. Exactly. Who cares? I don't know. It's just very funny. It's like, I get that it can be fun to sort of reminisce and like see other people, but it just makes me say a whole, oh, who cares about everything? Guys, get a
oh,
life.
Who cares?
Oh, who cares? Oh, geez. But it is really nice how we, like you said, we see Dorothy, you know, get serious and, you know, it immediately takes a turn, which is how these things work in real life, right? Like, you, one minute you're just joking around and goofing, and then the next minute that you are very serious. And I think what's interesting is, like, once, you know, flashing forward a little bit to part two, once actually Kirsten enters the scene and she's sort of making fun of them for this whole, like, Mary Had a Little Lamb musical and, like, all the weird stuff that they do, like, it doesn't even enter the writing scheme that you're like, well, she actually had a heart attack when she was masquerading as a Korean exchange student at somebody else's reunion. Like, I feel like that also is like worthy of like, what the fuck, you know, kind of question from Kirsten. Yeah, exactly. Like, it's kind of even weirder than like doing a play. But anyway, it cracks me up because I'm like, yeah, that was also a bizarre turn of what Kirsten does not expect her mother's life to be like.
Yeah, they're doing goofy things.
Totally.
Yeah.
But anyway, I moved farther ahead.
No, that's okay. So I think what works, but I have a lot of, I take issue with a lot of Blanche's writing in this episode. I think it's she's not the focus, so I get it. But what I do think really works is that, like, how truly, like, scared she is that Rose is dead when they get to the hospital and she's like, whatever.
I know.
And then she's kind of, like, rationalizing and also, like, she still centers herself, obviously, and like whatever, but like being like, oh, it was my idea. Like, we went, I like forced her to do that, even though I knew she wasn't feeling well. Like, that is, I think they actually all do a really good job playing like panic, including Sophia, who approaches it in a much different way. They're just such great actresses, which, like, you know, I know that we've established, but I think they really do shine in this kind of dramatic two-part episode.
They do. And I think I enjoy how this episode talks about different forms of grief. I think they do a really good job of showing it and balancing it. And despite, which again, we'll get into Blanche's, you know, Christianity or whatever. You know, they're especially Sophia and Dorothy, like, really do a great job demonstrating of like how people act in certain situations. And we've seen it before, but to your point, like, they're funny when they're funny, but they're so good when it's a serious message that they're trying to get across. And I really appreciate that because I do think these things are really complex and it's very helpful to see a scenario played out on the screen that shows the complexity of grief and the turns that life can take. So the hospital scenes are really good, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And even like the initial Blanche, like, coming to Jesus or whatever, like the praying, one, it calls back that line about how, you know, the when she prays, like,
Oh yeah. Chapel. The kitchen almost becomes a chapel.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, that is, and when she's talking to God and she's like, I just want to say good job. Like the, you know, that.
I know, yeah, exactly.
And initially
I promise
like,
I will never pick up a man in a library again. Unless he's cute and drives a nice car. Amen.
Yeah. Like it feels so desperate, I guess, at the
Yeah,
beginning,
yeah, yeah.
why I kind of allow it. But then it just goes off the rails.
Well,
And
just because she sticks with it, it's annoying, you
yeah.
know? It's like, I guess because they try to stick it with Dorothy saying, who knows, maybe the prayer worked, right? And like that's supposed to make it stick, but it doesn't really work very well.
Right. No. And then like this handsome doctor comes out, this handsome, like nice doctor comes
Do
out
you
and, you know,
need
asks her
to?
out. And he's like, no, I don't need to, which I also love. Like
Know,
he's like,
which I know
nah.
he's straight up like, what are you talking about, lady? Thought you
Yeah.
were cute.
Yeah.
It is funny, like the whole like where she's like, I promise I will not have sex with anyone, and then the whole crowd moans. Like,
Yeah.
ah, like they know the joke. It's kind of hilarious, but oh geez. Anyway. But we yeah, so we should get deeper into that because I think to your point where it goes off the rails, they have Janet specifically say, organized religion, it makes me crazy, you know?
Yeah.
And then I don't know, they don't really earn, or she doesn't really earn the fact that, like, oh, I have to be like this and keep some sort of promise because this is what made Rose be okay. It's just, it doesn't work. It doesn't
Yeah.
stick around. And like I said, I keep being like, oh, wow, the Blanche religious thing is getting very old. And then immediately after, like, laugh because it's like from the shores of Tripoli, like, whatever. You know
Yeah.
what I mean? It's like, it's kind of funny. I do love that she's like, I can see you are a non-believer. Like, there's a
Yeah.
lot of good lines. Thou shalt not steal. Hey, she got one.
Yeah.
I literally have, like, every time I make fun of the religious thing in my notes immediately after, I'm like, well, that was a funny line. So I give it to the writers that they're like, okay, it doesn't stick for the character for me, but it does get a few great lines out of the crowd.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, no, and it's funny, like I agree. I have a similar thing. It's just like the way that it is so, you know, she just assumes it as part of her like lifestyle and personality. And I think you really kind of hit the nail on the head when you're like, she never has this moment of like, I have to do this because like this was a bargain I made with God and like I need Rose
Yeah.
to be okay, so I'll do it. Like it loses that initial kind of believability factor of desperation and just becomes like annoying. Like it, you know, and like, I don't know, I guess it particularly just to go back to this, like the idea of you and me and little Melissa, like good Christians going to church, it's like
Little Sarah.
that doesn't work for me. Like that doesn't land. I don't believe that she would be so, you know, like make these mistakes again and again. And like I yeah it's not my favorite when she's like Gideon Bibles for everyone, like
Oh my
that's
God.
funny, like but
Yeah.
it feels too I don't know, it's just a little flat, I think.
Yeah. The only thing that's been in more hotel rooms than she has. She can't even quote it correctly. It's so funny. I was thinking when you were talking about, you know, making the same mistake again, with Janet and Sarah is like the And I think you are right. Melissa is Janet's daughter. So I don't know what the fuck's going on there. Goddamn Blanche's family. But if Janet had sort of a like, oh, it's so nice to see a different side of you, mother, right? Like something where the Christian shit was like a good thing in her eyes, where like
Sure,
her
yeah.
mom was reformed, still fucking problematic, because guess what? Like, there's nothing wrong with the way that Blanche lives her life, and there's a lot of things wrong with the way a lot of quote unquote Christians live their lives. But whatever, we don't have to get into it right now. But I think that it that could have been a little bit of a sticking point of like, oh, Blanche not only feels like she made a promise with God and Rose is okay, but this is sort of the chance to sort of get in with the daughter that hates her. Like. And then we could have
Right.
had some sort of comeuppance at the end where Blanche is like, I don't believe in all that stuff. And Janet's like, well, me neither, really. I just, you know, I just wanted you to be a nicer person.
Yeah.
Like I said before, like something rooted in non-selfishness, right? And it's just, it's so fascinating to me. But again, a lot of funny jokes.
Yeah, right. Totally. For sure.
But yeah, so the, okay. Can we talk about the end of, you know, the, like, so they talk to, you know, Rose. I think she does a really great, I think Betty White does a fabulous job when she's, you know, when they're first in the hospital, when they go after the reunion, I think she does a really good job of sort of playing like her sickness in the forefront, but like still being the character, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
And yeah, I think it's like all of the promises and like that's all real, right? Like, I like Dorothy. I do like, again, joke at Dorothy's expense, but she has a good defense where she's like, she's going to be a lawyer and I can't go out.
More. I love that. Like,
I think it's really a good line. It's perfect.
Take an aptitude test. Yeah.
Totally. It's really great. But like, man, it is, they do a really, really good job of like giving the blow of Rose being prepped for surgery, like to the audience as well. And also like, damn doctor, did you have to pause between, you know, before they're prepping her for surgery? Like thought she was dead, you know, like where she's like, she went into cardiac arrest, big long pause. You're like, okay, could I have the information that she's alive first? Jesus Christ.
No, right? Like,
it's really wild. But parallels to Lucille Ball, who went to the hospital, was totally fine, had a procedure, everything was like recovering normal, and then boom, she died. Crazy stuff.
Scary, yeah.
It's really dramatic.
It is very dramatic. In contrast to friends do little things for each other, like get their heads frozen.
Oh my God, I know.
I love that.
You're like, Jesus Christ, just little things. Oh man, I don't know. It's funny. I end part one being like, damn, that doctor's cold as bitch, you know, like whatever. And like then like the second one where she's like, why is she being so crude? And then like I'm totally on her side after they like try to bargain their way in by being bizarro. Like
yeah.
In Blanche's like religious shit. And I was like, and literally she just walks away. I was like, good job, doctor. Yeah.
No, but it's really scary. Like I feel like it ends on a really, really scary note of like, you know, and then it what's interesting is like it picks right back up, like right there, you know, running around the hallway.
Absolutely.
But it is scary. And I think what's also interesting is like a real serious death scare, which you could argue like there's been a few of the girls, but this feels much more like,
yes,
you know, we've seen so much of it. And so close to the end of the series, like
I know.
You know, are you thinking like, wow, is Rose really gonna die? Like this is how it's gonna end?
Absolutely. I know. It's real, it's really real. Like watching it live, you'd be like, they might do it, you know?
Yeah. I obviously, which I think is really truly the message of this episode, like I have always thought, and I still think, like the idea that like a blood relative or like, you know, you have to be married or something, which was, you know, like that's so fucking stupid. And like,
it's
why?
So dumb.
Why do you need to legally define who the closest like next of kin is? I find that to be,
and it's
so,
not them,
so objectionable.
It's not them. Like I'm sure it has some sort of, you know, red tape sort of paperwork root in like advocacy or like you don't want to convince them to pull the plug or like whatever, right? Right. But it's like seeing someone as a visitor in the room is very different from I am their advocate. I'm going to tell them what to do. I'm going to tell you what to do for them, right? Like that's a different story.
Right.
And I feel like, I don't know. I have not thankfully had any recent experience with like serious, you know, medical troubles, but I don't think that's the rule, you know, but I don't know. I'm not sure. Like, that's what I'm saying. I know it's definitely the rule when it comes to like making decisions or like talking to doctors, HIPAA certification, whatever. Like there's a lot of things there that are important from like a next of kin perspective and decisions. Which is also a reminder to talk to not only for yourself, but talk to the people in your life about what their wishes are, because you always have to know that shit and it's terrible when you don't.
Yeah. And write down who you want to do it.
Exactly. But Yeah, but I think that that is like conflated. But I do appreciate that they use it as a device to force the chosen family storyline. I do think that comes really, I think it comes across really well. And moreover, I really like how, you know, I do like Kirsten comes in hot, right? Like she's just like really kind of like irritated with them before she even gets there.
Yeah.
And she has a lot of thoughts swirling in her head, but I love, again, the understanding of how people process grief, where Sophia immediately says, leave her alone, pussycat. She's scared, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's so good because it reminds me, I forget what it was called, but like, let's say for the lack of a better term, like the circle of grief, right? Where let's say there is something to grieve. There's people, you know, somebody that you love has died, right? And it's sort of like if somebody is sort of closer to the inner circle of this person, let's say their spouse or something, and you're a friend, right? There is this notion of like, okay, well, you should probably, if you're further out from the circle, you should be more of a listening ear and a comfort to the people on the inside of the circle versus expecting them to comfort you. And you can expect people further outside the circle from you to comfort you, right? Like, so it's sort of like mm-hmm. comfort in and then like venting and such out of the circle, right? And it was a kind of an interesting concept where it's like people get, and I've experienced this firsthand with a friend of mine that passed away, people get pretty weird and competitive a lot with the grieving process, right? And I think some of that is like a subtext in this conversation, right? Where the girls are very much like, we're family too. But what I love about the scene is that they never say, we're more family than you are, Kirsten. I love that. I love that they acknowledge that she has complicated feelings and that she wants what's best for her mother. And they make the point of that their mother is actually living life great. And that she's not, you know, like she's actually really enjoying it. We are true family. We would do anything for her. We're not trying to make her life more difficult, more challenging, more strenuous. And we want that to come across to you, Kirsten, but only in the like to calm your worries way and not in the competitive we're closer to Rose than you way. I think it's really beautiful. I think it's well done. And who knows if it like came naturally or if they selected the words really, really carefully. But I do think that there is a really like, just from me having been very close to the grieving process and seeing that people get really wacky because grief does crazy things to people, I really think they wrote it perfectly.
Yeah. Yeah. And what I like too is like, you know, when Sophia another time is like, oh, she's scared, whatever. And Dorothy's like, well, I'm scared too. Like, I think that to your point, like it's yeah. not competitive. It's truly just like their own yeah. emotion. And like Dorothy's trying to defer to her, but then it becomes, it just yes. like kind of overwhelms her in that moment, which I also think is really powerful and really, really good.
Yeah. But notice, like she says that to Sophia. She doesn't say that right. directly to Kirsten's face. That's what I think is really an important distinction there is yeah. like she feel like it. You can also feel competitive. Like I would be pissed off if I were Dorothy and Blanche and Sophia, if Kirsten came in like, whatever, you're just laughing. And you're like, girl, it's not that, but they don't ever really say that to her. You know, they take it really like Kirsten later when she comes in where she's like, you know, she basically kind of sasses Dorothy a little bit and she totally ignores her and just says like, well, what did the doctor say? Right. Like she just lets yeah. it slide and she should let it slide. That's actually yeah. the right way to be, you know?
Yeah.
Which I love.
Right. And cause Kirsten doesn't get it from the very beginning. You know, like the bit, the girls are all together and there's like the whole Rheingold thing, which is really classic.
I love it.
Love yeah. to see Rheingold stuff in the wild. Actually the Gutter, which is a bowling alley in Long Island City, has a Rheingold lamp, which I was
love
so
it.
And then,
you start singing it and people are like, are you 70 years old?
Yeah. Yeah. They're reminiscing and it's cute. And I think that actually like that kind of also lines up with another piece of grief, which is like Sophia making these little jokes and like trying to like lighten the tension and all of
yes.
that. And Dorothy being like, can you not? And Sophia being like, no, like this is what I'm doing to make the room feel better, to make myself feel better. And even when they go and see Rose and she's like, I know she can hear us. You know, like, I think that that also kind of shows the complexity of grief and like the emotion in this moment. I also, what's interesting is that Kirsten lives in Miami, which,
oh my God, an hour away? What? Right. Thank you for bringing that up. I was like, are you sure? She goes,
kind of an insinuation that she and Rose have like drifted apart. Like Sophia talks about her and Dorothy.
Dorothy's like, I put her away. She sure did.
Which that doesn't really line up either. And I think that Kirsten's emotions too, like to your point, aren't actually real. Like they're just, you know, charged up because she's so scared and so nervous. You know, like this is such a
rough. Her emotions are real, but like the facts that they're based on are probably not at all.
Right. True. That's what I mean. Yeah. Like she's not actually out to criticize Rose's lifestyle.
Yes,
I don't think.
Of course not. Yes.
I think it's just like looking for someone to blame in this sort of like desperate situation. Absolutely. Where also interestingly, like she arrives at the hospital alone because her husband is home with their kids.
Totally. So
that also probably adds a layer of
definitely,
you know, kind of just it comes out in weird ways, I think, when you're in that situation.
Absolutely. And I think so. I think I can take sort of the, it's like, it's funny studying like the Janet off screen, what has happened, you know, to affect this present moment, and the Kirsten off screen, what's happened in this affect this present moment, is like, it kind of adds up to me a little bit, because like, you could pretend that, okay, Kirsten moved to Miami or whatever, like to be closer to her mother, to take care of her, totally assuming that when she moved down there, Rose would absolutely move in with her. And Rose is like, no, thanks. And like, right. I could see Rose being like, oh, there's no distance between us at all. I'm glad my daughter lives nearby. I'm glad my grandchildren are nearby. And then like Kirsten being like, well, there is distance because I haven't communicated with you about how hurt I was that you didn't move in with me and that you kind of don't need me, right? Like there's that all comes out at the end where she's like, no, she's done. Like she like sobs about how she's not lucky to have her. It's actually kind of cute and adorable.
Yeah, it's
so
cute.
I can see that happening. And it's kind of funny because, you know, they talk about the girls that she has, like the grandchildren, and then like to your point of her arriving by themselves, like, okay, hospitals, no place for kids. I can see that being a thing, but I also could see that like you would want your husband's support. And guess what? The other three women who live with your mother probably would watch the grandkids in the lobby on and off. You know what I mean? Like this is like how I would love to operate in American society, where like if you're in a pinch, you could ask people for help, you know, maybe. Or like, but I of course, from a childcare perspective, understand like he's got to watch him and she's got to come. But I can see another scenario where they are closer and the grandkids know the other, you know, like the girls. But I think in my mind, in my rewriting of the little we have to go off of in this episode, is that Kirsten is sort of holding a quiet grudge. Or not grudge, but like she is putting the distance between her and Rose doesn't even know there's distance, I guess.
I think that's fair. I think that that's totally right. Because even when she's like, one time I came, you guys were doing this crazy thing. Another time you were doing this other crazy thing. And it's like,
yeah,
you know, the lack of understanding of why Rose would want to live independently with her friends versus like with her.
And also it was Rose's crazy thing. That's what I love about that story, is it wasn't like them putting this on Rose like last episode with the boudoir photo. Like Rose was like, I'm gonna write this musical.
Yeah, I love it.
Love that there's that callback, like they're reminiscing about something we've never heard about before, and you're kind of like, okay, whatever. And then like she's like, well, anyway, and Dorothy's like, it was a wolf.
I was a wolf.
I do think it's funny.
Just to and to bring it back to Betty White, like when Kirsten goes and sees her and she does look really sick, it's good acting, like before she goes into surgery and she like asks about her girls and she's like,
yeah,
and speaking, and even the bit like the Saturday night, like that is funny.
Oh,
like it works
so great. I know. Yeah, she's like kind of got like labored breathing, which if you needed a triple bypass, you probably would have, you know. Yeah. My girls aren't too young for anything.
So sweet.
It's I know, it's so sweet. And it's like, I do also love the like, yeah, the live from New York. And first I like to sing a number for my new album. Yep, she's ready. Like it's like very, very anesthesia like vibe. It's kind of funny. I forget who said, I forget if it was Chris Gallo or somebody else on the internet was like really, really bummed that when Betty White did actually host Saturday Night Live, that they didn't call back to that somehow.
Yeah, it's a little niche.
Because it's really, yeah, it is a little niche, but it is pretty funny. But yeah, I think that like everything that plays out, I do love that the turning point with Kirsten understanding the girls is, I mean, I hate it, but I love it that it's about American healthcare, that it's about, yeah. It actually brings it back to a very practical issue of the moment, which of course a daughter would be worried about, of like, oh my God, she needs follow-up. Her insurance doesn't cover it. What the fuck is going to happen? You know, I have two kids, right? Like yeah. You can see her brain swirling, and it's awesome. Cause like, you know, Blanche sort of takes the lead there and is like, well, don't you worry about that at all. Like hell, that's why houses have mortgages. Like everything, we made a pact. I love it. I love that she just kind of melts into putty in their hands, being like, oh wow. Like, and you know, underneath she kind of feels a little like an asshole too. Like,
yeah.
She was thinking so, not so poorly of them, but you know, using them as a blame, you know, like, to deflect the blame,
totally
that she felt. But I think it's great. I honestly think that is, again, really good writing where it's earned. Like, it's not just it's not the Blanche like Christian thing where you're like, this isn't really earned or like rooted in the script. I do think that it plays out very practically and, you know, is a real fucking thing, because that's exactly what happens in hospitals. Here's a bill for $500,000 and good luck.
Yeah, have fun. Yeah, no, I think it's great. And Blanche is so clear-headed. And I think actually something you brought up earlier too, when Dorothy is kind of talking to her, you know, after the fact and like, we'll take care of her, all of that. Like, it's interesting because they all kind of step in as like almost surrogate mother figures to Kirsten too in this moment, which I think is also obviously because of their friendship with Rose and like because they know Kirsten, and they also know Kirsten, I think, in an interestingly like intimate way that Kirsten maybe doesn't necessarily know them back, which is like,
oh yeah,
Rose has talked about it. Like Rose has probably talked to them about like raising her, and you know, like it kind of goes beyond like their surface level relationship with her.
Yeah, it's a really good point. I didn't even think about that.
And yeah, like of course, like it's, that's really scary to come out, and it just like is such a non-factor to your point. And they're all like, yeah, of course, like we'll make it happen. And even earlier when they're first there and Blanche is like, what if she's had a massive stroke? Like, what are we going to do? And Dorothy is like,
oh yeah, I know.
Right? Really, but she's like, we'll take care of her. And then we'll put her in Shady Park. It's so good. They do a good job with like punctuating the really heavy scenes and tension with like funny lines when
Sophie
is like, my hiney's asleep, and Dorothy's like, fine,
oh my we'll god, fine, we'll keep our voices down. So really good. I think it's really, yeah, it's like, and again, it's real, right? Like where Sophia kind of spells it out, like some people make little jokes, and again, I've been in that situation where people are joking and laughing and it doesn't seem appropriate, right? And it's like, no man, like this is how they're coping with it. Like that's,
yeah,
it does not mean that they don't care or that it's not on their mind, you know, which I think is really real. So it's very, okay, it's very helpful. So all right, but let's also, like when she's like, she needs to be with her family now, all of her family, oh my god, I started, yeah, sobbing.
Really sweet.
So they go in, you know, nobody looks good after surgery, tell that to Cher. And then I really think it's interesting that Sophia uses the line, like, I know Rose can hear us. I feel like that's a lot of, and I, oh God, I'm kind of dismayed that I did not look up like actual like medical papers on this. Sorry, people who wanted me to do more scholarship. But like the idea of like coma patients and other folks who are otherwise like non-communicative or like in various degrees of unconscious, or, you know, like what does communicating look like from, you know, the actual medical standpoint? I feel like this is a trope that's used a lot, but I also think it is something I've seen in real life with people, right? Of just like talking to people. And I'm not sure where the line is of like, you want to believe this or if actually like something could possibly be getting through. Like, to me, it's funny because you're like, isn't she just asleep? Like, I don't think she can hear you. I don't think she's like struggling to talk. I don't know. There's a lot that is going on there with that one line that just kind of triggered something in me. I've seen that scene a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know if you feel similarly.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I think it's kind of like debated. I feel like it's also similar to, you know, the sensation of like the white light when you have a near-death experience. Like people
yes.
really do talk about having that. And then there's scientific argument that it's like just like a lack of oxygen and a hallucination.
Yes.
And I think that like what we do get to see Rose having is this the head frozen dream. Which we have to spend some time talking about because Jim Colucci's book, when they talk about this episode, like there is a bit of commentary on like, you know, the decision to have a major character have a heart attack and whatever. But
yeah.
Most of it's about the heads.
it's kind of really funny. So let's talk about that. Okay. The first thing I noticed, because I knew we wanted to also get into like the practical nature of setting this scene up, is that the ice appears to be, and I didn't see this in Colucci's book, but this is my own opinion, is that it appears to be just clear gelatin. There's a little bit of like jiggliness to it when some of them move, which I thought was really fascinating.
Well, that makes sense. It couldn't be real ice for like styling purposes.
So. No, exactly. And for set lighting and things like that. Obviously it'd be too cold for them too. But yeah. But yeah, do you want to share what you gleaned from Colucci's book? I have a lot of it in my notes too.
I mean, really, like the big thing that I have is like they really wanted to do it. Like it was a big gag. And they, you know, it was so funny. And it's so funny to have Sophia come in with like this young body and like the mannerisms and whatever.
Oh, God. And her little vest. Like,
yeah.
It looks like her. God. It looks like when she appeared on Blossom, you know? Like,
yeah.
It's like that. That's such a 90s outfit to be like, young person.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, I don't know. What do you have on the heads?
Well, I think like, okay, so... There was like this writer really wanted to do it. And Gail Parent also was like married to a man who was really into cryogenics at the time. And like, she actually looked up, she was like, you could, at the time they were like advertising that you could just freeze your head as like a discount, which is, I mean, everything about it is hilarious, but the head only thing is like actually based in reality, which is even fucking funnier, right? So I just also love that like they were talking about it, and there's like a quote in Colucci's book going, of course the ladies hated it, they were so uncomfortable, and B. Arthur actually was claustrophobic, so they actually set up, and this is kind of amazing, like thinking about actual set building with no CGI and like all these actual props, like they set up the kitchen table so that it was way taller, and think about how tall Bea Arthur is. She is actually sitting upright in an office chair on wheelers, on like rollers, you know, caster wheels, and
right.
They just like kind of rolled her up into like plug into this table because she was the most claustrophobic. And then of course, you know, Betty White and Rue are kind of crunched in a little bit more, but they're still kind of sitting upright because they built the table up high. And then what they had to do was when Sophia walks in, they had to put a platform behind her so that she would be the right height. And that like, so it was this very big concoction where they also did weird camera angles to make it look like it was the regular kitchen. Like
yeah,
there's
so
a lot about it. Very, very funny. Which was fascinating. But anyway, it was like a lot going into it, and it is a memorable scene, you know. It is kind of funny. I totally forgot that it goes on for so much longer. In my head I was like, they just yell, we're heads, and then you didn't tip the guy. Like those are the two things I remember about it. But then there's the whole like, this is how I died situation.
Yeah, which makes sense. It's thank you, baby. Glove is funny.
I mean, yeah. It is funny, and I also do love how Rose kindly is like, well, you met somebody who couldn't keep his hands off you,
yeah,
to Dorothy.
It's really
cute. You know, it's very sweet, especially in her stupor, you know?
Yeah, and it's interesting because the bit of Rose sharing, like, oh, I guess, you know, how I died, like, that is dark. Like, that.
I know.
Quick moment in this super goofy, super funny scene where you're like, right. Oh, my God, like, that's so scary.
I know. No, it's really tough.
Yeah. It is, you know, that visual is so iconic.
Totally.
And
yeah.
It's totally like season 7. Like, we're just gonna go all out on this ridiculous like prop building, and mm-hmm. You know, also like, why make someone claustrophobic do that? Like, just, you know, it's just such.
Well, it's like, yeah, that's, I just love the quote. Of course, the ladies hated it.
Yeah.
You're like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, the cryogenics thing. I was like, oh, you know, there's the rumor about Walt Disney that he's frozen.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I wonder if that's true. I couldn't find anything conclusive.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't put it past him. Sounds like he would do that.
Yeah. So. Not if you just do your head.
Yeah, I mean, oh man. Apparently they also, like, for the whole you didn't tip the guy punchline, like they had the concept in their brains of, like, that Sophia would have a young body, right? And I do love that, like, that was finally the punchline that they landed. They were, like, looking for a punchline for, like, a long, long time. But that is pretty good.
Yeah.
She's so fun with her little, like, sassy body language. So used to seeing her walk like an old person, right? And you're reminded that Estelle Getty is the second youngest in the show.
Right.
It's so funny. But yeah, I think, you know, and I do love the, like, where Rose is like, don't go, you know, like, seeing you reminds me that I'm alive. Oh, it's so
Ooh,
sweet.
Well,
it's so
I'm...
lovely. I know, right? And it's just, it's very, very cute. And like I said before, I love when, you know, later when they're at home, that we get to see Janet be there as part of the reception, you know,
yeah,
for
it's nice.
Kirsten bringing her home. Do you think it's just such a good idea to scream surprise at someone who just had heart surgery? I think that's
good
hysterical.
Point. Surprise.
Surprise.
The whisper's funny.
For you. It's very cute, you know.
Cute. Really cute.
But yeah, it wraps up great. The whole, like, drop knife thing is funny, you know. There's not even an end credit scene. Kind of amazing. Oh.
Thank God they knew that. Yeah. Yeah. The hug is really cute. It's cute that the daughters are there. I think that that's actually really nice too.
Yes,
and it's
absolutely.
Nice. We're almost at the end. And so it's a nice episode to see, just like really rooted in like the chosen family thing. Like that's the message of this episode, which is so
absolutely.
Sweet.
And it's important because we've seen it, obviously the whole show is predicated on it, but we've seen it in various ways come in and out. And like, this one really is just like, when the shit goes down, we are still a united front, you know, which I think is really lovely, you know? Yeah. And it's, it feels like it could, if, like, I don't know, just talking about it aloud, it feels like it could be too on the nose and like be like too obvious, but the writing is really well done. Like I said, I think it's very realistic. And I think that using Kirsten as, you know, sort of the foil where they have to explain themselves to her also works. Could also come off really awkward and like too explanatory, but again, the show in the hands of the writers, in the hands of the actresses, is really just excellent.
Yeah, the acting I think too in this episode is stands out for me as just amazing performances all around.
Totally. It's really great. I have like a bunch of other lines. I don't know what you, it's like literally so many pages of notes for this one.
Yeah.
Should we just fire them off?
Yeah, go off.
All right, go off. Well, another Colucci's book tidbit was going back to the prom. So one of the folks working on the show is from Sayville, Long Island, which apparently at this time had like a series of arson fires, and wanted to do a fundraiser. So they actually wrangled a walk-on experience where they raffled it off. And the prom king is the guy who won the walk-on experience, and he paid $24,000.
So cool. Wow.
So wild, right? Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
So it's so funny. I didn't even know that that was like a thing that even, I mean, I'm sure it was like slightly informal or whatever, you know, it's like, who knew how many people would know about that, but it's interesting to have that experience of like, okay, yeah, sure, be on the show, you know. It's kind of great. And another thing about like the audience, so when Rose is like rolled out to surgery right after she's like, I'd like to sing a number for my new album, I just noticed, I played it like multiple times, where like a bunch of audience members start laughing, like they kind of start laughing, like I don't know if it's like nervous laughter or they think something funny's happening or something funny is kind of happening in the widescreen version that we can't see. It's very bizarre. I know that like Shady Pines Ma 85 for the bathroom repair episode really blew my mind on Instagram a few weeks back, where he was like calling out that when the shower turns on and they celebrate at the end of the plumbing repair that the girls do, that Blanche actually turns on the shower, which I've never noticed. And I always thought they were celebrating just because water came on and they did it wrong, but who cares? And it's bizarre to me. So I kept thinking, like, what is happening off screen on this very serious moment when Rose is getting rolled out to have triple bypass surgery? Like, Kirsten doesn't do anything funny. Rose doesn't do anything funny. There's no one else in that scene. I have no idea what it is, but go listen to it. It's very funny.
Thing too, like,
yes. I mean, that's part of having a live audience, right? You just pick up whatever anybody does. But I thought it was so strange.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't notice that.
Yeah. Another one is, I'm working backwards here, is that, you know, during the, when they're talking about, like, you know, really not taking anything for granted. And like, you know, they're reminiscing. Sophia's like, I had a tuna fish sandwich. It was beautiful. Where like, they were like, Blanche, I guess, says, you remember that time she took that playwriting class? It was so funny because I thought, I was like, is this, they're going to do a flashback? It's just because it was a two-part episode. I was like very confused. I was like, wait, I don't think they flashback in this episode. But like that tee up was exactly like, was just like exactly like all the other flashback episodes. Do you remember that time about this thing we never talked about before?
Yeah.
The and then of course they
take
yeah.
the place of a flashback, I think.
No, yeah, for sure. It is just really kind of hilarious. But yeah. And then my only other comment is like in the very beginning when they're talking about the yearbook and, you know, asking about the natural color of her hair, where she's like, all right, what are the school colors?
Yeah.
Brick and a kind of some many color between the bricks. It's so great.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's amazing.
Oh, man. This isn't a riddle.
Yeah. I'm trying to see what else I have. The little joke to raise their spirits bit is really funny. I do love when they're trying to get Rose to do it and she's like having these hesitant thoughts about going and masquerading as someone else, and she's like, to me that's almost like lying. It's like so innocent, and I think it actually like adds to the build-up before that.
Exactly.
No, I think that's it. Oh, actually, no, I do want to talk about when Sophia does the Swedish accent. I know that that's it's really funny to me. Yeah.
You betcha, sure.
I love that. It's funny.
I know. They do have a good job, like the desperation of them just trying to be able to see their friend. Like, yeah. It's actually pretty awesome. Yeah. But that's the part where I was saying, I just love that the doctor just fucking walks away. Yeah. She's like, Jesus Christ. I know. It's really great. Oh man. But yeah, I mean, such a satisfying episode and like such a lovely summation of what the show's about, you know. I think it's really real, and like you said, they do such a good job as always of like peppering in some very funny jokes and very serious commentary and weaving it in and out. So just an example, A+ example of what the show does best, for sure.
Yeah, totally.
So, all right. Well, as we mentioned, you know, next time, or we mentioned previously that next time might not necessarily mean the next episode of Enough Wicker release, but next time, in terms of our regularly scheduled program, we're going to discuss Frolicking, Sex So Good You Name It, and the final episode of The Golden Girls.
Wow.
Take care, everybody.